Hello and welcome to another installment of the Weird Chronicles. Each episode, we bring you tales of action and adventure from Malifaux and the other side. Many seemingly powerful people in Malifaux are secretly puppets of even more powerful and sinister entities. But sometimes, the puppets themselves are the ones pulling the strings. I hope you enjoy Puppet Strings by Ben Counter.
Puppet Strings by Ben Counter. But what does Empress Wu desire? Said Yinping, pirouetting the puppet across the stage. Bunraku gambolled across scenery painted to depict a fanciful Asian palace. A deft tug of her strings made her curtsy, then spring up in a ballet dancer's leap. She is wise, but she is cruel. She is cultured, but she is a monster. Behold, as she bids her own sons to compete for her favor. Wu beckoned the other two puppets from the wings of the miniature theater. Li Hong was warlike, and his wooden face painted an angry red with fearsome black eyebrows. Li Shan was dressed and painted as a scholar, with scrolls tucked into his blue robes and a white, placid face. Hong believes he should rule as the future emperor, for he is the greatest warrior in the land. But Shan says the wisest should rule, and that Hong will destroy his people in pursuit of glory. Which will prevail? Thus begins a trial that will split the imperial court in two. Yinping looked up expectantly from his position bent over the puppetry stage. The few dozen faces that looked back at him did not seem particularly enthralled, but his performance had only just begun. That was to be expected, he told himself. After all, there were only a few people seated in the town hall who might be familiar with this form of puppetry. And the rest were from cultures without a history of Bunraku theatre. They wouldn't engage right away. And of the three children sitting in the front row, the girl in the red checked dress was definitely interested in the bright and intricate puppets. He hadn't lost them, not yet. He could fascinate them. He could win them over. From Hong's sleeve sprang a bright, sharp blade, spring-loaded into the puppet's hollow forearm. A few eyebrows raised, and the anticipation in the audience rose. That always worked. The possibility of violence ignited the imagination. Li Hong scorns the scholarly pursuits of his brother. A true leader needs only a sharp sword and the will to use it. Hong gambolled across the stage, stabbing and slashing at imaginary enemies. Yinping's fingers worked as quickly as spiders' legs pulling at the strings to send Hong spinning and hacking, while Shan backed away with his head bowed in fear. Did they know how long it took to learn how to perform with such dexterity? Perhaps a couple of the Three Kingdoms folks in the audience had an idea of what it took. Yinping had been practicing for years. First the basic steps and gestures, then the intricacy of keeping three bunraku interacting at once and aping the subtlest human gestures. Yinping's fingers were gnarled and knobbed like broken twigs. The tendons stood out like taut piano strings. If the audience had understood what this performance took, they would be on their feet. Hong thrust and jabbed. Shan ducked and jumped out of the way. Then Shan began to dance, the mark of an educated and cultured soul. The two circled one another as Wu watched in the background, nodding her head in silent glee to see her sons at each other's throats. Hong leaped on his brother, cutting at Shan with a violent thrust. Shan struggled as Hong's wooden fingers closed around his neck. It seems Li Hong is surely to be the end of his brother. His hands are bloody. His blade is keen. Behind the two feuding brothers, Empress Wu looked on with the corners of her articulated mouth turned up in an expectant grin. Yinping took a wooden flute and clamped it between his teeth. He blew a simple, reedy tune as Shan rose to his feet and danced again, this time taking the center of the stage. He danced to Yinpin's tune, with traditional gestures of sorrow, brotherhood, and hope, spreading his arms as if imploring the heavens, then sweeping down low as if swooning in despair. It was complex and extremely difficult to coordinate. It was all too easy to tangle Shan's strings or leave a limb dangling and unattended. But Yinping kept the bunraku dancing from one side of the stage to another. As Yinping's focus increased, the audience was losing theirs. They were rough mining folk, with their faces and hands still stained with the black dust of the mine shafts. A couple of them looked like professionals, barbers or shopkeepers, perhaps a schoolmarm. But most were simple people without much appreciation for the highest arts. He would lose them if he was not careful. They did not want to see Shan dancing, no matter how well practiced a puppeteer the scene required. Yinping had to take drastic action. Hong leapt to his feet and whirled his sword around his head. He lunged at his brother and thrust the blade just under Shan's outstretched arm. From the front, it would look like one bunraku had impaled the other. Shan's puppet had a concealed cavity in the abdomen, activated by a wire that was rarely pulled. Yinping pulled it now, and the door in Shan's stomach snapped open. A handful of wadded red silk tumbled out in a startling facsimile of blood pouring from the wounded brother's body. A gasp went up from the audience, not an expression of true Grand Guignol horror, but definitely a gasp. The girl in the red checked dress put her hand to her mouth in shock. One burly miner seated near the back clapped a couple of times with a dim smile on his face, as if it took the sight of gore, even stylized highly artistic gore, to activate his brain functions. Shan took some moments to die. He dragged himself along the stage, trailing his silken guts behind him. His hand waved feebly towards his brother, perhaps weakly cursing him, perhaps in the hope his brother would take his hand in his final moments. Then he flopped to the stage, his strings limp. Empress Wu clapped her hands in glee as Hong gazed down at his dead brother, sword still in hand. Yinping pulled a lever at the side of the puppetry stage, and a pair of red curtains fell into place, signalling the end of the show. The audience clapped. Not riotously, it was true. Not crying out for more. It was more polite than rapturous. But they clapped. The little girl chattered excitedly to her mother about what she had just seen. They liked it.
"I must say," said Jocasta MacLean, proprietor of Blasted Stumps Music Hall Schoolhouse Town Hall, "I have never seen anything quite like these. I take it they are traditional among your people."
In the small back room that passed for the backstage area of the hall, Yinping was packing away his puppet show. One case held the stage, which folded cunningly away to fit into a box the size of a small suitcase. The other case was lined with purple felt with indentations for each of the three puppets, their strings and paddles, and extra costumes. "The bunraku originated in Japan," he said, "in the time before the unification. Now they perform tales from across the three kingdoms. They have done so for hundreds of years."
"You don't say."
Jocasta was a hefty woman, with a square bovine face and the bell skirts of a schoolteacher, one of the functions she fulfilled in Blasted Stump. She was also the mayor's notary, payroll administrator, surgeon's assistant, and deputy sheriff. She poked at Shan's face, moving the articulated features of the puppet's face. Yinping fought the instinct to grab her wrist and stop her.
"Yes, quite the curiosity, these little fellows."
"I have many different shows," said Yinping.
"I can perform the whole Romance of the Seven Empress. Of course, that is rather heavy to begin with. The tragedy of the Haunted Well Maiden is always most memorable. I believe the fine people of this town would particularly enjoy the tale of the Undying Knife Man or the Eight Dream Demon Ballads. I have the repertoire to keep the folks of Blasted Stump enthralled for years."
"Ah," said Jocasta MacLean,
a look of reluctance on her face. I see we have had a misunderstanding, Mr. Yinping. I hired you for one performance only. Your act is unique around these parts, but it's not the kind of entertainment I can sell week after week. Blasted Stump is hardly the sort of town that can support a performer full-time. But you don't have to support me. Not with money. I'll take room and board, Miss McLean. My puppets will grow on the townsfolk, I just know it. Just give me a chance and...
Mr. Yinping, said Jocasta, her voice taut. Desperation does not become a soul. If you had a troop of ladies who could shake their derrieres every night, perhaps I might find a way to give you a monthly spot on my stage, but all you have is puppets. I am sorry to disappoint you, but the matter is closed.
Just one more chance, pleaded Yinping. One more chance.
Please, said Jocasta, pity in her eyes. It's a puppet show.
With that, she left the back room, leaving a faint whiff of lavender. Yinping dolefully packed away Wu, Shan, and Hong, folding them up carefully into their case. He passed back over the stage as he headed towards the doors and was confronted by the rows of empty seats in the darkened room. Tomorrow this place might be used for a town meeting or a barn dance.
Uncultured idiots, said Yinping to the empty room. Addle pits, ungrateful cattle!
He hauled his two cases out of the hall and into the night. The sign read Contract Town 39, with the seal of the Guild of Mercantiles. Beneath the sign, some enterprising soul had nailed a plank on, which were painted the words Blasted Stump. The town thus designated was clustered around a square surrounded by clapboard buildings, each with a story-high facade that was supposed to give them the gravity of a town many times the size of Blasted Stump. The effect was more apologetic than grandiose. The bank where guild scrip was doled out to the workers stood beside a general store, a barber's shop that doubled as a dentist's surgery, and the undertaker's offices. The multi-purpose town hall stood at the short side of the square, like a patriarch at the head of an unappetizing feast. The rest of the town consisted of the houses of the mining folk, most of them built by the inhabitants with varying degrees of competence. The town saloon, Sally's, was a large and frowning three-story building that squatted at the edge of town as if exiled by the more genteel inhabitants. The constant sound of raised voices and song informed passers-by that Sally's was perhaps the only true success story in Blasted Stump. The reason for the town's existence rose in grim, frowning battlements to the north. The hills were disfigured with hundreds of black scars where holes had been dug or blasted to access the seams of copper and iron inside. Heaving trails of mine spoil reached out a quarter mile from the largest mine heads, which were overlooked by pulley systems that lowered the miners into the lowest shafts. Miners with pneumatic loading exoskeletons stomped between the mounds of soil carrying hoppers of ore. A rusting, patched-up automaton the size of a building assembled a new pulley tower over a newly blasted tunnel mouth. Sheds of blackened wood emitted pools of smoke from the smelting process, and a single platform gave access to the railway line. There, the weekly cargo trains picked up Blasted Stump's contribution to the guild. Sometimes, perhaps once a week, one of the miners would pull a glittering gemstone the size of a fingernail from the strata beneath the hills. The guild tallymen who rode the train would log the size, clarity, and colour of the soulstone, and hand the miner a hefty bonus for his or her find. It was the tales of soulstones coming from the hills that brought new miners to Blasted Stump. That and the decades-long indentured labour contracts that bound them to the guild until they dropped. Yinping set up his miniature stage near a fountain in the town square. The market was in town, and local farmers and craftspeople had set up their stalls in the square, so Blasted Stump was as vibrant as it ever got. Tradesmen cast odd looks at Yinping
as he took Hong and Shan from their case and strung them to their control paddles.
"Hardly the grand opera,"
said a grubby woman, carrying a crate of equally grubby vegetables past Yinping's spot.
"Ah, but there can be high culture even in such a place as this," said Yinping.
Shan jumped to his feet on the stage.
"Even for people such as you," said the puppet, its mouth flapping in time with Yinping's high-pitched voice.
"You got jokes?" asked the woman.
"I got art," replied Shan with a pirouette. "I got the beauty of drama and dance."
The woman grunted in reply and continued to her vegetable stall. Yinping began with a simple cycle of dancing and sword fighting. Hong, the poorer dancer, would trip up Shan during their routine, sparking an argument that led to Hong drawing his spring-loaded sword. Both Bunraku would survive the subsequent fight and reconcile with another dance, and so the story would begin again. Once hooked, he would draw his audience into a more involved tale. Then they would grow into a large and rapt audience and become loyal followers of Yinping's Bunraku plays. That was the plan. A pair of Three Kingdoms miners, on their way to the seams in the hills, paused for a moment to watch the two puppets dance. One had a prosthetic arm powered by a miniature steam engine in the shoulder and gestured at the puppets with his steel hand. The other threw a coin at Yinping's feet. It was good fortune, especially among those who originated in Japan, to throw a coin to Bunraku performance. The coin, with the stylized head of the Governor General stamped on the obverse, was the first hard cash Yinping had earned in Blasted Stump. The two puppets halted in their performance and bowed gravely at the two miners, who continued on their way to their labors. As the stallholders called out their wares and the sun passed by noon, a few souls paused to watch for a few moments, but none were enthralled enough to form the core of an appreciative crowd. It would take time, Yinping told himself. He needed time. Two more Three Kingdoms folk dropped money as they passed, each time a single coin. As much for his own entertainment as anyone else's, Yinping began the prologue to the third romance of the emperors, with Shan and Hong engaging in an animated debate over dividing the kingdoms of ancient China between them. Yinping realized he had an audience at last. It was the little girl from the front row last night, wearing what looked like the same red dress. She idly chewed on the end of a braid as she watched Hong and Shan. Yinping gave her a smile, but the girl seemed too puzzled by what she saw on stage to return it.
"Weren't there three of them?" the girl asked.
"Lady Wu is indisposed," said Hong.
Yinping gave him a voice slightly less squeaky than Shan's.
"She needs her beauty sleep," added Shan. "Boy, does she need it."
"Silence," barked Hong. "Try showing some respect."
"Try showing some appreciation for personal hygiene," replied Shan. "I mean, yowzers."
The girl cracked a smile at last.
"You're funny,"
she said to the two puppets.
"I'm funny," said Shan. "He's just funny looking."
"Dorothy!"
called out a lady who was buying pots and pans from one of the stalls. Like her daughter, she had honey-coloured hair tied back in braids.
"Don't you talk to that man. He's just after money. Come on."
The girl dutifully trotted off to join her mother. Shan waved a sorrowful goodbye to the back of her head. It was a start. The girl liked him. She would tell her friends and they would tell theirs. That was how it would begin, Yinping told himself. In this insignificant contract town, it would start. It would work this time. It had to. The performance at the town hall had bought the temporary use of a single room in a building scarcely more substantial than the miners' shacks that surrounded it. Due to a quirk of architecture, Yinping's room had no windows, and so it was by flickering candlelight that he laid the puppet case and folded stage by the bed and struggled out of his boots. Yinping travelled light. While carrying the stage and the puppet case, he had room for little more than a change of clothes when he went from one town to the next. He stripped off the costume in which he performed a loose jacket and pants in deep, shiny crimson, embroidered with dragons and lotus flowers, and sat down on the bed. Something glittered metallically on the floor on the other side of the bed. Yinping peered into the gloom and saw Lady Wu lying there on her back. She wore her empress costume of heavy robes and flowing sleeves, with her bright red rosebud lips standing out from her white face.
"There you are," said Yinping quietly. "Why must you run away? Can't you see I'm..."
Lady Wu was lying on a pile of cables. They were heaped in greasy coils on the floor. They must have been cables from the mine works, perhaps spares from the pulley towers that hauled up hoppers full of ore from the lower seams.
"Why, Lady Wu?" asked Yinping, his shoulders sagging as he deflated. "Haven't I tried? Can't you see how hard I work?"
He threw open the puppet case, revealing Hong and Shan nestled in their indentations.
"And you encourage her," he snapped. "I took you out today. I found you an audience. I..."
Yinping paused and calmed himself.
"I'm sorry. I just tried, that is all."
He gently picked up Lady Wu and placed her in the case between the other puppets.
"It will be better," he said. "I promise you that. Please just trust me. That is all I ask. Just a little longer, please."
The puppets just stared up at him. Hong's eyebrows were angled down, giving him an angry, disapproving expression. Shan seemed to smirk.
"I've been learning the tale of the Star Beast," said Yinping, forcing a smile. "Do you remember the peddler in that last town? He had a book of the old tales, the House of Noisy Ghosts, the Day of the Shambling Corpse Men. Would you like that?"
Yinping got no reply. Eventually, he closed the case and sat on the bed, staring at the wall as the candle burned down.
"I wish I'd never killed that guy,"
he said to himself. With the market closed for the day, there were no passers-by in the town square to make it worth setting up the stage there. The town was quiet, save for the occasional reports of dynamite blasting echoing down from the hills. The train would not be coming through for the better part of a week. Blasted Stump was dour and dead, silently baking in the remorseless sun. Dead save for one place. Sally's saloon never closed. The round-the-clock mining shifts provided a stream of prospectors trudging back from the hills, dehydrated after a long shift and looking to replace a day's lost sweat with several pints of weak beer. Yinping let hope kindle inside him as he lugged the puppet case and miniature stage towards the saloon. As he approached, he could hear raised voices and the plonking of a raucous piano. A few horses were tied up at the water trough outside the saloon, and two dogs chased one another in the street looking for scraps. These people would watch, he told himself. These people were desperate for entertainment. Not the refined theatre of Bunraku, perhaps, but Yinping could be flexible. Even the call of high art could take a step back when there was an audience baying for something different. Yinping stopped at the saloon doors. He took a deep breath and readied himself to perform.
"You chuck your jerky in my back room one more time, Hank," said Sally. "I'm going to cut you off. Serious this time. Now mop it up."
Hank, the object of her current scorn, meekly took the profit mop and skulked off to the room at the back that the regulars used for card games. He had the bent shoulders and pale tautness of a lifelong miner. Sally, on the other hand, was a red boulder of a woman with her face coloured by broken blood vessels. Her heft made her difficult to move, especially once she was installed behind the bar of her establishment, which was a major advantage in her vocation. She glared at the patrons, chortling at Hank's misfortune, before she noticed Yinping entering.
"What can I get you?"
she asked, which was as friendly as she got. Yinping dragged his cases up to the bar. The place was almost full, with dozens of miners having just come off a shift at one of the biggest copper mines. They were grubby, grey-faced folk, intent on downing their beer as efficiently as possible. Yinping saw some Asian faces among them, who might well be familiar with Bunraku Theatre from their own childhoods or on the other side of the breach. "I'm new in town,"
said Yinping. Just put on a show at the hall.
Beautiful story, said Sally. Beer or whiskey?
You want me to perform?
Sally raised an eyebrow. Perform? We got Eight Fingers Willie on the piano right now. Good luck moving him.
She gave a jowly nod towards the grey-whiskered man bent over the saloon's upright piano. His playing was enthusiastically percussive, though not closely related to any recognizable tune.
Oh no, said Yinping. I have a puppet show.
Sally laughed and slapped the bar.
Well, damn, son, you see any eight-year-olds in here?
Unraku Theatre is a tradition hundreds of years old.
Sure it is. So is playing jump rope.
I am sure your patrons will enjoy it.
Sally cast a doubtful eye across the host of miners swilling down her beer. These guys?
It is an ancient art, most hilarious and well-beloved.
Yeah? You expect paying?
Yinping shook his head. Just what your patrons are willing to grant me in gratitude.
Well done. I guess you're welcome to try. Anything that cheers up these miserable arseholes?
Shove it, Sally, said one miner, a shaved bear of a man with a hydraulic pincer for a hand.
Love you too, Butch, said Sally.
I have your permission, asked Yinping. Sally shrugged.
Whatever, be my guest.
Yinping found an unoccupied table by the back of the room and set up his stage. He took Shan out of the case and strung him to the control paddle before lowering him onto the stage.
What in the hell is this fella doing?
Asked a miner with pockmarked acid stains on his face and hands, a legacy of working with the chemicals used to process the miner's ore.
You can give us a little song and dance, little man.
Put a bag on your head, buddy, and I'll give you whatever you want, squeaked Shan.
Pockmark scowled and began to rise from his chair. The other miners at his table, a mix of skinny, malnourished-looking men, laughed at him and pulled him back into his seat. Yinping swallowed. The words had leaped out of his throat. His mouth was suddenly dry. A shudder went through him, and he had the awful, too-familiar feeling of his hands working without any input from his conscious mind.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, from the mysterious realms of the Three Kingdoms, announced Shan squeakily. The one and only Bunraku extravaganza. Which one of you good folks wants to start the show? You with the grazes on your knuckles, or you with a face only a mother could abandon?
Pretty funny,
said Butch, the huge miner who had sidled up to Yinping's table.
But I ain't sure you picked the right saloon.
Well, bless my soul, sir. Is there a face up there somewhere?
Prodded Shan.
How long has it been since you saw your 12 toes? Yeah, you got the look all right. This town, 400 people and 6 last names, am I right?
Keep going, said Butch, opening and closing his pincer hand. I reckon I could pop you real good, like a pimple.
Suddenly Yinping was swinging Hong onto the stage.
You wish to fight me?
Demanded Hong, his red face fierce.
My kung fu has 12 animal styles. 12! What man dares to face the way of the goldfish?
Hong fell to the stage and flopped around comically. Some of the miners laughed. Butch backed off a little, but he still stood glowering.
Ah, no one dares face my mighty blade!
Hong hopped to his feet, and the spring-loaded blade snapped out of his forearm into his hand.
And now, announced Shan grandly, Her Majesty, the Empress Wu!
Yinping's hands were flying across the top of the stage to operate all 3 puppets now on stage. It was an intricate art, and every performance needed long hours of practice before even basic movements appeared natural. Yinping's hands moved of their own accord, and sweat broke out on his face as muscle memory moved his dexterous fingers too quickly for an onlooker to follow. Empress Wu made her entrance, sweeping her skirts dramatically around her.
Well, well, what have we here?
Came the imperious voice from Yinping's throat.
Such an assembly of men, such virility. But do you just put on a good show, gentlemen? Or is there something under those breeches after all?
More than you!
Shouted one of the miners at Yin Ping.
My father brought me to Bunraku when I was a child,
came a voice from in front of the stage. The speaker used English, but Yin Ping recognized the Japanese accent to it. He looked up to see one of the Asian miners looking down at the stage with scorn.
That was beautiful. This is a disgrace.
What is a disgrace? Said Shan. Is you blowing your wife's dowry by betting on a dogfight?
The Japanese miner's face hardened, and he backed off, shaken.
When she finds out, he'd better keep his legs crossed, the puppet cackled.
Damn,
murmured Pockmark, quick to take advantage of his Japanese colleague's discomfort.
Never knew you liked a good bet, hero. Guess you don't know more.
And what about that kitty girl who came through here a while back? Continued Shan to Pockmark. Anyone remember her? Disappeared real quick. Well, Craterface here is the reason.
Pockmark sprang to his feet again.
What the hell do you know about that?
Well, my dear, you can't keep a secret in this town, said Wu. Mr. Trong back there has a predilection for opium he can't quite keep under his hat. And Mr. Duquesne can't help but squirrel away a few nuggets from that gold seam he and his buddies won't tell anyone about. There isn't a soul who doesn't have some scandalous little tidbit.
You keep on like that,
said another miner, a stocky, furious-faced man sporting a grand black moustache,
and you're liable to get your throat slit.
Now, Mr. O'Shaughnessy, said Shan. Going by how you shot that fella down by Cavendish Creek, it's not my neck I'm worried about.
The puppet raised its hand and jerked its head to the side in imitation of a man being hanged. The sound of metal on wood was so loud that it stopped the growing furor instantly. Sally had slammed the head of a fearsome lump hammer onto the table, jarring the stage almost onto the floor.
Show's over! She shouted. Sit your pickled asses back down before I start cracking heads.
The patrons backed off slowly. None of them were as tough as Sally, not when she brought her faithful hammer out from its place behind the bar.
And you,
she said, turning to Yin Ping,
I'm going to do you the solid of letting you walk on out of here with both knees attached. I don't know what you hope to achieve by riling these folks up, but if you try it again, they won't be talked down even by me. You understand? Now get!
Yin Ping felt the volition returning to his hands. He couldn't speak. His tongue, swollen and sticky, would not let him speak. He grabbed his stage and hefted its weight with the puppet still inside and hurried for the door.
Can't you see I'm trying? Said Yin Ping. They're simple folk here. They don't care a damn for high art. I just can't find you an audience here. After all this time, can't you see that?
The puppets lay tangled up in their strings on the half-collapsed stage. Yin Ping sat on his bed in the boarding house, imploring the puppets, his eyes rimmed bright with tears.
I know you're bored, but those men would have killed me. Where would you be then with no puppet master?
He put his head in his hands.
I tried to throw you away, but you kept coming back to me. I tried to destroy you, but you wouldn't burn. What do you want from me?
The puppets didn't reply.
Of course I know what you want, but I can't give it to you. I can't give you an audience every night. They just don't exist out here.
Yin Ping sighed and began to pull off his boots again.
We'll move on in the morning, he said. There are new towns founded out here every day. We'll find some place where they appreciate you, I promise. Just be patient. Please, I promise we'll...
With his eyes lowered, Yin Ping didn't notice the figure creeping up behind him or the rock swinging down at the back of his head. He felt it, though. And then, for a long time, he didn't feel anything else. In the place between unconsciousness and waking, Yin Ping saw the face of the man he had killed.
It had been back in a town called Whiskey Falls, a place growing too fast for its sheriff to keep up, where a hustler like Yin Ping could find pickings among the green newcomers. He'd cornered his victim in an alleyway and drawn his knife. The man had been Japanese. The two didn't share a language. They didn't have to. The man had held up his hands as if to beg, and then, as Yin Ping checked behind him to make sure no one was watching, the old guy had made a break for it. He was too slow to get far, especially with the heavy case strapped to his back, and Yin Ping's knife had sunk so easily between his ribs, it seemed the old man wasn't there at all. Yin Ping had grabbed the case and run. When he was far enough away, he opened the case to see the three bunraku staring up at him. Back then, he hadn't known anything about them, except that they looked valuable. No one had wanted to buy them. And then things had started happening. Things he didn't understand. Things that meant he had to skip out of whatever town he was in even faster than normal. Whenever he had tried to abandon the puppets, he found them waiting for him when he woke, sitting lined up in their case. He tried to give them what they wanted. He tried to make them happy. But it never worked. Yin Ping's eyes flicked open. The back of his head throbbed. He had been laid out on the floor of his flophouse room. With a sudden rush of panic, he jumped to his feet to see the puppet stage standing where he had left it. It was empty. Yin Ping bolted out of the room and into the street. It was the middle of the night, and the town was empty save for one of the ever-present stray dogs trotting down the dirt track. In its mouth was a white scrap of meat that looked, in the moonlight, a lot like a pair of human fingers. "No," hissed Yin Ping. "No, no, no." He knew where he had to go. The town hall was the closest thing to a proper theatre a blasted stump had. Yin Ping ran all the way to the square, with only a couple of wandering drunks casting him confused glances. Lights burned in the windows of the town hall, and Yin Ping hurried nervously up to the main doors. They stood ajar, and he put a hand against them to push them open. His hand touched something sticky and warm, and came away red. Yin Ping's stomach was bunched up in his body as if it was trying to force its way up through his throat. The panic rose like bile. He opened the door. He knew what he would see. In spirit, if not the details, but even so, it hit him like a punch in the face. Two figures stood on the stage at the far end of the hall, illuminated by lanterns in the rafters. One was Jocasta MacLean. Her head hung to one side, cheek against her shoulder, opening up the huge red wound like a second hungry mouth. Her throat had been almost completely severed, and the vertebrae stood out whitely against the dark red gore. She wore her school marmalade dress with its hooped skirt, stained black down the front with blood. The other was Butch, the enormous miner from the saloon. His stomach was opened from sternum to navel, and red-black guts hung around like a glistening loincloth. Tiny cuts covered his muscular arm. The hydraulic piping of his other arm, the one with the pincer hand, had been cut, and it was supported only by the cabling that held him upright. The two corpses were supported by lengths of the cables Lady Wu had stolen. Yin Ping's gaze ran up them to the rafters above the stage. There in the shadows crouched the three bunraku puppets.
"Now you listen here, Jocasta," said Butch. "I hear you been carrying on with that moon-faced son of a varmint."
The voice came from Yin Ping's throat, and he almost choked as he forced his voice into a low growl. He couldn't control the voice he gave the corpse puppet on stage, just as he had not been able to silence the bunraku as they baited the patrons of Sally's saloon. Hong pulled on the cables looped over the rafters, and Butch raised his bloody arm to wag his finger as if admonishing Jocasta's corpse. Another cable made Butch's mouth flap open and closed as he spoke.
"Please, Butch," replied Jocasta in a high squeal. "Don't be angry. I love him."
Lady Wu controlled Jocasta and had her raise her hands to her face in dismay.
"Why, you malodorous Jezebel!" roared Butch. "I'll take care of you and him both."
Jocasta cried out in fright, and the high shriek tore at Yin Ping's throat. Shun hauled on a bundle of cables, and from the wings lumbered Pockmark from the saloon. His ravaged face was half ruined by an enormous wound on the side of his head where his skull was caved in, as if a huge weight had been dropped on him. One of his legs was almost severed and dangled among the scraps of his shredded breeches by a strip of skin. He loped onto the stage as Shan controlled him and held up both hands in shock.
"Jocasta!" cried Pockmark in a slack-jawed drawl. "Butch, I didn't think you'd be here."
"Don't you pretend there ain't been nothing going on between you and my little hummingbird," retorted Butch.
He raised his good arm, and Jin Ping saw an axe had been tied to his hand, a hand with two missing fingers. Butch brandished the axe angrily.
"No, Butch," cried Pockmark. "Me and Jocasta, our love is pure. Don't destroy such a beautiful, perfect thing."
"I'll destroy you both, you yellow-bellied snake."
Butch rang at Pockmark, who fled, and the two of them gambolled around the stage as Butch's axe rose and fell mechanically. Blood from the two men's wounds scattered across the seats in the front row as Jocasta's body span around, wailing in despair. The axe hacked down at Pockmark's shoulder. Pockmark's left arm came away in a spray of gore. It had been severed and then stitched back onto the shoulder to come away easily as the performance demanded. Jocasta howled and whirled as Pockmark's blood sprayed across her.
"No!" screamed Jocasta. "My hideous love!"
Lady Wu pulled on Jocasta's cables. Jocasta lurched into the middle of the stage to interpose herself between Butch and Pockmark. Butch's axe rose again and fell, burying its blade in Jocasta's chest. Cackling with laughter that came from Yin Ping's lips, Lady Wu pulled on another cable. With a ripping sound, Jocasta's lower half came away, and the contents of her torso emptied themselves onto the stage. Gore sprang out as her upper half swung around in a bloody circle. The two men whirled as well, yelling and screaming in a terrible cacophony as Jocasta's organs spattered onto the stage and lengths of gut thwacked into the front row. Blood sprayed. So much blood. A storm of it.
"Stop!"
screamed Jin Ping. He had finally forced his own words out of his mouth. The Bunraku stopped working their corpse puppets. Jocasta McLean swung to a halt, still dribbling blood from her severed trunk. All three bodies hung limp and inert.
"Don't be angry," said Lady Wu.
"You knew what would happen," said Hong.
"What happens when we get bored?" said Shan.
Yin Ping had tried to keep them entertained, but the only thing that kept them entertained was performing in front of an audience. And they were so hard to come by out here.
"You don't have to do this," said Yin Ping.
He slumped into one of the empty chairs.
"I learned how to use you. I practiced hard. I can perform the whole romance of the Seven Kingdoms and 100 stories besides. Isn't that enough?"
"It's not the same without an audience," whined Lady Wu.
"We tried to have some fun in the saloon," Shan reminded him. "We went out every night and listened to their secrets so we could put on a performance they would remember. But you took us away just when it was getting good."
"So we have to make our own entertainment," Hong finished.
I'm not angry, said Yin Ping. "But this has to stop. I can't keep running. Someone's going to catch up with us. They're going to hunt me down, send a posse."
"We'll stop," said Lady Wu, her words forcing his own from his mouth. "Just as soon as you give us what we want."
Yin Ping put his head in his hands and wept. He knew he never could. He had learned to work the Bunraku with considerable skill, but he'd never get the Grand Opera House audience they craved, never put them before the appreciative audience for which they were created. He'd leave Blasted Stump and find another town where he could find a regular place in a music hall or saloon house stage where an audience would sit enraptured by his tales. But he knew that he would fail. He would have to run from there too, and again, leaving more blood-spattered horrors in his wake whenever the Bunraku puppets got bored. And it would never end. Not while they still pulled the strings.
That's it for another installment of the Weird Chronicles. Join us next time for more tales of action and adventure.